A quick hello and we're good to go. Welcome to the show, Dennis Hume.
You don't even need auto-tuning.
Brilliant. And today we're going to be talking about Facebook's hidden impact on SERPs. Now, number one is I love anything to do with the SERPs, especially brand SERPs. And the thing about this particular conversation is I don't know very much about Facebook. And so Maria invited you, Dennis, because you know a lot about Facebook.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm going to put your statement up here. And for people listening to audio, I will read it out. Google has long claimed that social media doesn't impact search results. This is clearly false. They've also insisted that ads don't affect SERPs. That, too, is clearly false. Is that what you're saying, Dennis?
A lot of the things the search engines say are not true, and I can tell you that as a former search engine engineer.
Brilliant. We announced the huge killer whale update a few weeks ago, and somebody said to me, but is it true? Have Google announced it? And the answer is no, of course they haven't announced it, because if they announced it, everyone would know what was going on, and everyone would cheat the system. So as you say, take everything they say with a pinch of salt. They're trying to serve their own purposes like you are. And apparently, according to Dennis, we're going to find out exactly how Google uses social media and how it uses ads in the search results. But before that, brand SERPs, knowledge panels. I had a look at your knowledge panel. Here it is. Absolutely lovely. Associated with Larry Kim, Neil Patel. Lovely description. And if we then click through, we see Mary Smith, who is an athlete and an internet personality, and Google's getting a bit confused there with the image. You could claim the knowledge panel, but this is not the domain that you actually currently use. There's a hyphen between Dennis and you, and it redirects to your current domain, which is dennisyou.com without the hyphen. Yep. I'd love it if you could explain what happened there.
But yeah, someone else has had my name for a while. I finally got it back just a few weeks ago. I had to pay him a little bit of money. He wanted a lot of money before, but for the last few years, we've been negotiating on that. So finally, I got it back. But right. I've been on Dennis-U for years.
Okay, well, this explains that. And here we're looking at the search generative experience for you, which is absolutely brilliant. Lots and lots and lots of photos. It's got you absolutely nailed down of who you are. And as we'll see in a moment, that isn't as obvious as people might think. And if I then look at Dennis Hume Facebook, because that's what we're talking about today, we get a really good generative result where it absolutely nails down what you know about Facebook, your Facebook pages, your multiple social media platforms. And what I'm really focusing on here is how well it's understood you. And so we'll have a really quick conversation about to what extent have you worked to ensure that it understands you, and to what extent has Google just been super smart?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've done almost nothing.
And brilliant.
When Facebook advertising came out and I started running ads and speaking and this whole thing, I was ranking number two on the search for Facebook advertising. And the number one result was Facebook themselves. So I was ranking number two on one of the most competitive search terms on the internet, doing nothing, no SEO. Mm. What I did was I spoke, I was on TV, I shared my best knowledge, I wrote articles, but I didn't do anything that could be categorized as SEO. Yet all of my friends who are professional athletes, for example, they have fantastic knowledge panels and they've done nothing. Right. So I would argue.
So,
yeah, go ahead.
No. I mean, and that's really, really interesting. It's always been that if you're a visible personality, you will tend to rank well. And if you're visible and your digital footprint isn't too messy, Google will understand it. And when Google can't understand it, it's because your name is ambiguous or because it's a messy digital footprint. But then I looked in the knowledge graph, and what struck me is that knowledge panel is super huge, but you're not in the knowledge vault. When we do the reverse lookup, looking up your KGM ID, it's not in the knowledge vault. And if I then double check with your name, we find dozens of Dennis Hughes, which is apparently a very popular name around the world, including film directors, poets, heaven knows what else. And if I search for the KGM ID, which I did at the end, it's not in that list. So you have this huge knowledge panel, incredibly rich, really great generative AI experience results, but you're not in the knowledge vault. And I think that's a really huge indication to people that knowledge panels are triggered without being in the knowledge vault, and that a knowledge panel can be huge without you actually being very incredibly reliably explicitly understood by Google. That's my super favorite thing, because I work on CaddyQ Pro, and this is what we do all day, is build knowledge panels. You are listening to Branded Search and Beyond with Jason Barnard. Now, back to the show. But that's not the topic today. It's Facebook, how it impacts the SERPs, and at the end, how it impacts brand SERPs. So let's come back a step. You yep. say social media affects search engine results.
Absolutely. How? So you do the brand SERP, you know, ranking on people's names. My former boss at Yahoo became the CEO at LinkedIn, Jeff Weiner.
All right.
And he said okay. that his goal was to rank number one on people's names. Do you think he's achieved that goal mostly?
He's not ranking number one, but he's certainly ranking page one for pretty much everybody who's on LinkedIn, yeah.
And LinkedIn is a social network, right?
Yes.
Social network results absolutely affect search results.
I like the simplicity and the obviousness of it when you say it.
And Google has said, because of the changes with EEAT and how, you know, looking at people's, how much time they spend on a site and engagement, mm-hmm. we've seen that sites that have no inbound links or link authority, but have really high engagement of traffic that comes, will rank on very competitive terms, right?
Right.
Would you not think that traffic that's driven from social media, or whether it comes from social media or not, that comes to a site mm-hmm. can affect search rankings? That Google doesn't care that it's ad driven or not, as long as it drives actual real engagement. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree.
So if you're using our dollar a day strategy on Facebook, which is looking for videos or other kinds, especially short videos that drive 10% plus engagement, and some of that drives site traffic, or some of it drives just engagement just on Facebook, that Google picks up on that and that affects search rankings.
Can I ask a question? How do you measure the engagement? And you say 10%. What do you mean by 10% engagement?
10% engagement is 10% of the people who see that post, like, comment, or share. And you know what the average is on social media or just on the internet in general on engagement. It's like
fractions. No, I don't. But
it's super low, right? I think for ads, it's something like 0.02%. It's something very, very low. And Facebook overall, it's probably, you know, 1% or 2% at best. But we're looking mm-hmm. for a standard of 10%. So if people are scrolling, if 10% of the people like, comment, or share, that sends a signal to Facebook, this post is very relevant. And so that relevance score, which Facebook uses, is the same thing as Google's quality score. They're almost nearly mm-hmm. identical, right? Because quality score and relevance score is the intersection between content and targeting, which is saying, mm-hmm. is this something that's interesting enough that people will click on it and continue to watch and continue to engage? Not just clickbait them with an interesting headline, but actually they think it's interesting enough that they share it with their friends, that it becomes, and then it becomes viral and that kind of thing. So I would argue that really good content not because a marketer thinks it's amazing, but because mm-hmm. the audience actually believes it is. If the social networks can see that, it's the same algorithm that drives quality score on the search engines organically. I think it's the
right.
same thing.
No, absolutely brilliant. And number one is we're looking for 10%. 10% to me right. seems absolutely huge and unreasonable as a request. How do you get anywhere near that?
Well, think about this. What is the average CTR if you're number one, right, organically? I think it's 20% to 25% in that range, right? Yeah. So how is it? So if you're ranking number one organically in search results, you're going to get far more. If you're ranking on your name, right? If you look at the CTR, yep. organic or paid on brand SERPs, what are they? That clearly north of 20%, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So 10% is not that difficult if you have, if you are sending content to your audience, let me give you an example. So I'm teaching people how to make 1 minute videos. And I've got a whole framework, a 3-part framework on how to get their attention, what do you say, call to action, that kind of thing. But instead of me teaching it, I had my friend Grant Cardone do it. And Grant Cardone is well known in the world of real estate, in the world of, he's 3 years ago, he was the number one influencer in social media, that at least he told me. I believed him. And so what I took was videos of Grant Cardone and I talking about stuff, and I targeted fans of Grant Cardone. So how relevant is that? It's super relevant. So we had a 40% view through rate, meaning people that saw that as they were scrolling stopped and watched for at least 15 seconds. And that is way higher than the average, you know, point whatever percent, you know, getting 40%. So we often get 10, 20, 30% engagement because content that we make that it contains someone or something that's well known, we target it against that very thing that's already known. So it's already super relevant. It's not because I'm clever. It's not because I have some interesting way of saying something. It's because I'm super relevant. So if I make a video about 5 amazing things I learned about knowledge panels from Jason Barnard, and I target Jason Barnard on Twitter, for example, because I can target every single handle on Twitter. I don't care if you're brand new. I don't care if it's a nobody. I can target any handle. So if I target that handle with content from that person, thing, place, whatever, it's going to be super, super relevant, right? I did this with someone 100%. With a nobody, a friend of mine, Logan Young. And just as an experiment, because I love to test things out to prove that it works. I've done this thousands of times. And he had a pit bull, basically. And that we had a video of a pit bull, and I targeted pit bull owners. What do you think the engagement rate was on that?
I'm going to guess 15%.
It was like 14%. Yeah.
It
went viral. It got lots of, and it was this whole thing about should pit bulls be on leashes, and this whole thing about a pit bull attack. And it became so viral that the media picked up on it. And then he became the featured news story. They brought in a TV crew and this whole thing. It was the main thing on TV. And it was on KSL, which is the number one TV radio news station in Utah. And that thing's got a domain rating of like 90 or, you know, it's a major media site, right? Which then drove SEO. So the way we drove SEO was through social media. And the social media thing that we did to get a news attention was being super, super relevant by targeting, by being very clear on the particular issue and targeting people in that issue, right?
Right. Oh, so it's targeting incredibly accurately with your advertising, which the social media platforms allow you to do. I mean, that's huge. I mean, we've got a lot of content and we could do that and we don't. So there's lesson number one for CaliCube. However, I'm going to come back a couple of steps, which is, from Google's perspective, it can't see the time that people spend on a particular video, but it can see likes, shares, and comments.
Yes.
So you need to focus on view time for the platform itself, but likes, shares, and comments for Google. Is that fair?
Well, view time is a great precursor to getting shares, because if people don't stay around and watch it, the same thing for TikTok, right? Google can't see how long people watch on TikTok, but they can get a sense of the virality. And we know that a comment is worth 6 times more than a like, and a share is worth 13 times more. We did some research to kind of figure that out. Ooh. So if we can get a higher proportion of shares, and if you look at your past posts on Facebook or mine or anything that's gone viral, look at the ratio of shares and comments to likes, and you're going to find that the most viral videos, that the proportion of shares is way higher. Sometimes we'll see 1-to-1, which is crazy. Mm. So it's not the likes that are pushing it. It's the shares. Why? Because a share is really like a repost. It's someone saying, I like this thing so much, I'm willing to put my own identity behind it. And so absolutely, Google is taking that into account.
And comments are somewhere in the middle.
Right. Because comments can be inflammatory. Okay. Comments can be, I disagree with this or whatever, but a share tends to be more of an alignment, right?
Ooh, I like that. No, that makes a lot of sense. And when you say it, you're going to go, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Because I was thinking, oh, a comment takes lots more effort. But you're right. It's ambiguous. You don't know which way it's going.
And I talk with Facebook's analytics team, and they treat shares as basically a new post. Mm. I used to think that a share was like a super comment, but it's really a new post. It just happens to be even referencing somebody another post ID.
Even if it's just a reshare without my own comments on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, still counts as a new post.
Brilliant.
And if you go to someone's timeline and you scroll, if you go to their profile and scroll down, you'll see when they reshared someone else's content. Same thing on LinkedIn. When you look at their profile, a share counts as a new post.
It spreads it out. No, you're right. It brings it out to of course, you're right. Sorry, that was a silly thing to say. That's why you're here, because you know what you're talking about. Brilliant. Spreads it out across multiple different verticals, different accounts. So my next question was, do I need to ask in my videos, like, share, or comment? Or do people do it naturally? Or do I actually have to bully them gently throughout the video? Because I get really tired of people asking me to do that.
So that's a interesting question. On YouTube, if you're going for subscribers, then yeah, you have your hook or whatever. And then in the middle, after you've delivered some kind of value to show that you're interesting, then you can say, by the way, please like, share, comment, or this alligator is going to eat you, or, you know, something funny. But I find that if you're really good, if your content actually is good, you don't need to do that. And it's the equivalent of, imagine if Jason, I told you, hey, please tell everyone how handsome I am. What would you think of me? Tell everyone, Jason, how smart I am, right? I'm such a genius, right? Tell everyone this, right? That comes off as kind of narcissistic and like promotional, like you're a salesperson. So ironically, if you are really strategic, meaning the content you've made aligns with that audience, and you're very clear, you're not trying to be everything to everybody, like the way you are with your consistent branding and the red shirt and the knowledge graph and everything with CaliCube and all the guides, like you're super, super consistent, right on point on that topic. You don't need to tell everybody that you're knowledgeable about that topic, because you've really, really niched down in exactly what you want to be known for, and you have the credibility behind it. And you have the credibility from all the other people that are knowledgeable in that area talking about it, pointing to you, which some people in the world of SEO would say, well, that's a really good backlinking strategy. Because I know Maria, your assistant, and these other people will say, oh, make sure you link to it. You didn't need to tell me that. Because of what I've learned from you and what I've seen, I've shared that without you needing to tell me. So absolutely, Google is looking at who is sharing your content, but it's not because you're having some VA in Pakistan buy links or asking for the shares or asking for likes and comments. It's because it actually is really good content. And you've chosen a very particular niche. You haven't chosen PPC and how to run ads on Google and all the things associated with PPC, right?
No, 100%. So niching down is really important. Niching down, knowing your market and targeting a very specific market, and not trying, as you said, to be everything to everybody, not trying to present my niche to everybody, because most people aren't interested.
Yeah. I mean, it's super basic. Everyone knows it, but few people actually do that.
Right. Okay. Next question. Profiles. How important are followers and activity on profiles? So my Facebook profile, how many followers I've got, how many people are interacting with my profile rather than the posts?
To some degree, I think a profile is an entity, just like a page is an entity. Some people think that pages have a penalty relative to profiles. I don't think so. The fact that Facebook recently released a professional profile, meaning you can go to your profile, click on the three dots and turn it into professional mode, and now you can run ads and you get analytics, so it behaves as a page, kind of.
Yep.
That just shows that pages and profiles carry the same weight from Facebook standpoint. And I believe, no one has proof on this, but I believe that Google treats pages and profiles the same. I also suspect that, I don't know this, and no one can confirm this, or maybe you can, I'd love to hear what you think, that as of a few months ago, before, having a blue tick, a verified badge, helped you as well. I think now it might not. This is me just guessing. I think now it doesn't, because you can just buy it for $14 a month, and you can just buy it on Twitter. But I had I've had it for 15 years on the major networks. I didn't pay for it.
Right.
Now you see my blue check, you can think like, well, did Dennis pay for it or not? Right. Now it's not an advantage that I had over other people. You may say, well, if you're notable and in all this, then you get the blue tick. So is it the chicken or the egg or, you know, causality? I'd say, I don't know. But I would think that when you, now that you know, prior to being able to buy it, my guess was that's a signal that Google used. But yeah, you know, I'm curious to see what you think.
No, 100%. I definitely agree with that. I mean, it's not something we particularly analyze, but certainly the application process on Twitter for having the blue tick meant that I really had to prove that I was notable within my niche, and that was really important. Yeah. So it's a huge signal to Google. But now you can buy them. Yeah.
But the same thing, I would argue that the same thing you would do to earn a legitimate blue tick is the same thing that you would, I would imagine, the same steps that you talk about for getting a knowledge panel and managing the items in a knowledge graph and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a really, really interesting point, because EEAT is this kind of whole bag of stuff, expertise, experience, authoritativeness, and trustworthiness. We've added an N and a T to it, so it's neat. And it's like notability and transparency. And notability doesn't mean notability in the Wikipedia sense. It means notability within my niche. So as you said, people point to me and they point to CaliCube. So we are notable because our peers and our market say that we're important and we're notable, but Wikipedia would never give us a page for what we're doing.
Yeah.
But that notability is the blue tick.
Yeah.
So I would argue that would make huge sense. Then you have, from a brand cert perspective, these social media platforms ranking. Now, what we see is when there is real engagement, they tend to rank on a brand cert. And generally speaking, if it's not ranking on your brand SERP and you're putting a lot of effort into Facebook, for example, then you're putting the effort in the wrong places and you need to talk to Dennis.
Well, I find that it's in the last year, I've said just put it everywhere. So instead of posting on Facebook, cross-post it, you know, repurpose it, meaning make minor tweaks so it can live on YouTube and Twitter, right? You can see the Twitter cards. You can see YouTube is, you know, Google will put these different snippets, highlights from these particular videos. And we found that some videos just seem to do in my brand SERP. If you Google my name, sometimes something that's on Facebook will just do really well. Sometimes it's when it's been repurposed to YouTube. Sometimes it's Twitter. I don't know which. Sometimes it's the actual blog post, because we'll take a video, you know, turn it into a YouTube, embed that YouTube as part of a blog post. It's hard for me to tell which one's going to do better. I think it's something to do with engagement, or like who's engaging on it and where it got shared. And maybe, you know, a colleague of mine emailed his list to go look at the webpage. Like Tom Ferry, who's a real estate guy, we did a masterclass on digital marketing and we put that on a webpage, but there's also a YouTube and there's a Facebook and a Twitter. And the webpage of that video is the one that does the best, followed by the YouTube. But that maybe that's because that's where his audience is, and that's what Google sees as more authoritative. Who knows, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, well, there are two questions for me there. Sorry, and then we'll come back to.
Yeah.
Number one is, which platform is he most engaging, or where does his audience engage most? I.e., where does his audience hang out? And the second is, has he made content that is really appropriate to the YouTube channel or to the TikTok? And when you post a YouTube-friendly video to TikTok, maybe it doesn't work as well. That's my thought.
Yeah, it looks like it's a toss-up between YouTube and the website. And because his team is so good, they've repurposed it so that it works properly on YouTube and chopped up into chapters and the video with the proper description and all these kinds of all the things set up with the channel, right? But at the same time, taking snippets of that and put those as little bites on Twitter, on Facebook, Instagram Reels, all captioned the right way. So his team has taken that one long video of Tom Ferry and I and repurposed it so it does live properly as a proper blog post, as a proper YouTube, as a proper Facebook and Twitter. But it wasn't something that was made individually for the networks. But if you repurpose it, meaning you process it in a certain way, then you can put it everywhere. So I'm a big fan. And I think you say something along these lines too, is that take that content and basically post it everywhere. It's not duplicate content. It's sending a massive corroborative signal that this is who you are and this is what you talk about and this is your network, right? But it's not just mass spamming all the networks with the same thing.
No, 100%. And that's kind of what we're trying to focus on at Calicube, and our team tries to do is repurpose the little chunks and make them valid and relevant for the audience on the platforms and get engagement. But I don't think we're anywhere near 10%, but that's definitely something we need to think about.
But imagine, you're big on YouTube, right? Imagine of all the guests that you have, because you can run dollar a day on YouTube and you can target particular people. But imagine you know, of all the people you've interviewed or have interviewed you or vice versa, you put just a dollar a day targeting that person or that particular topic. I think you'll get the 10%. And YouTube being part of Google, the engagement rate and all the YouTube sorts of metrics, I would think that Google takes that into account.
Yeah. And once again, Google will deny it.
Of course, because they don't want you trying to trick the system.
So we come back to Google has long claimed that social media doesn't impact search results. This is clearly false, which is delightful. It's a lovely way to come all the way back around to the start again. Now, I'm super interested in the answer to this question, which is the closing question of this incredibly interesting conversation. I loved every second of it, and our team are going to love every second of it. How does Facebook help or hinder brand SERPs? Dennis, a minute.
Facebook absolutely drives Google, and it is irritating to them to admit that a competitor for attention needs to be shown in the search results. You know, me as a search engine engineer, I would prefer not showing things from another competitor, but they have to, because they have to show a mix of where content's being created. And if there's more content being created on social media than on websites, then Google has to show things relative to where content is and to where people are. So we find that if you have a Facebook page or profile, you turn on professional mode and you run ads against it, it actually does drive more sharing and more engagement, which the social networks pick up on. And it actually is a fantastic SEO strategy because A, it allows for content creation because that's where people naturally create it. B, it's a testing ground because if it works well on social media, it's going to work on search as well. And then C, it sends massive corroborative evidence that this is who you are and this is who you're with. It shows your connections in a way that websites never can, showing who you're connected to and who's engaging. Of course, Google can pick up on who's engaging. And if you run ads against it, even more so. So it's worked super well for me. We drive SEO, not because we sell SEO, but because we do social media and we boost it and it's super relevant.
Ooh, I love that last statement because people think we sell SEO, but we actually sell digital marketing and package it for Google, which is where the SEO comes from. I like to say it's a bonus. I get told off all the time by Leanne. She says it's not a bonus. It's a natural extension of the digital marketing you're doing anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dennis. That was absolutely brilliant. I love that conversation. I do love the red shirt. This was a great start to 2024. This is the first program of 2024, and I hope everybody enjoyed it. And the second Calicube Tuesdays of 2024 is going to be Craig Andrews' coffee dates that close high ticket deals. I really want to get this because I think this is a great way that Calicube will be able to drive business in 2024. Craig Andrews is going to teach me how. Could you possibly pass the baton, Dennis?
Happy to pass the baton. I even looked up Craig Andrews and I saw that he is all about the first time offers. So instead of being a salesperson, jamming an offer down someone's throat, no one wants to be sold to. How do you package this kind of offer? I'm excited to see what you have to say, Jason, with Craig, and how do you get around that whole distrust of when you meet someone for the first time, and how do you collect money in a way that isn't just a low ticket lead magnet kind of way?
Ooh, I like that. You're being very eloquent today, Dennis, and that was absolutely lovely. An eloquent start to 2024, thanks to Dennis Yu. A quick goodbye to end the show. Thank you, Dennis, and thank you, everyone, for watching. Thank you, man.
Fantastic.
Calicube. It's all about your brand SERP.